My mom was a big coupon cutter and my grandma was a big coupon cutter. And one of the things that my grandma always, you know, instilled in me basically is be resourceful with your money. And you can also, you know, own a cottage and do these other things. And she actually gave me an article and it was cut your napkins and you can also own a cottage. And in that article, it had like 20 different ways to save money. And no kidding, we ended up purchasing their cottage. And that's the vacation home that we referenced earlier.
Welcome, millionaires and future millionaires. You're listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast, the show where you'll hear the stories and interviews of everyday millionaires. We'll unveil their decisions, their strategies, and their portfolio allocation. Now to your host, Jace Mattinson.
Welcome back to another episode of the Millionaires Unveiled podcast. This is episode number 349. Stace, you're our resident bracketologist here this week. We'll get to that in a second. How's it going?
Having a hard time reaching the microphone. my absolutely massive twin belly here. But it's baby's week, so I'm happy to get these little ones evicted pretty soon. Next couple days.
Yeah, rent's due. Rent's overdue. So, let's start off. We got a couple of reviews. I don't know how I missed these. They didn't come up on my regular email stuff. And then I just happened to be looking online. And we got a little bit of a few haters out there recently. Mr. LJB gave us a 1-star. He said that we've gotten lazy in the podcast. Said it's low quality, no production. And he said that we wouldn't even re-record the ad that we stumbled upon. Well, that's ironic. We actually do a lot of A-B testing here at the Millionaires Mill podcast. And that was on purpose. So I'm glad that you noticed it. And quite frankly, it's actually resulted in significant revenue. So I appreciate you calling that out. That's great for us. Great for you. And yeah, sorry about that. Got another one. I don't even know. This was from CDZ, blah, 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 something, 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 something. Said he's been a long-time listener dating back years. In fact, this used to be the number one podcast. Said it's been declining. He doesn't like our banter at the beginning. He said the guests aren't even engaging. Said last week's episode, which was a few weeks ago. This was actually almost a month ago. Stopped in the mirror, never fixed. Is anyone paying attention? Actually, it was fixed. Took us 3 hours. Apologize for that after 330, or actually about 46 episodes or something. Yeah, we had a little error. I don't know what happened. Some weird thing. But yeah, it took us 3 hours to get on that and get that fixed. But don't worry. It's been fixed. Appreciate the great listeners out there that quickly got on it on the Facebook group and alerted us of it. It was on a couple mediums. It wasn't on all mediums. Yeah, I don't know what it was, but we got to fix quickly. But at any rate, you know, I guess for the 300 and plus episodes of free entertainment and free information, we get a 1-star.
We take this differently. I always take it. I have a hard time not taking things personally. But anyway, we always try to have great content for you guys. Obviously, this is a volunteer thing. Our people who come on here, we're super happy that they're spending time to share what's worked for them. We don't really have any control over that. And, you know, anyway, we do our best. We're happy for our listeners who love the show. And there are many of you. And in terms of production, Jace is our producer. And he runs a really busy schedule and he does as well as he can. I know that he's looked into outsourcing some of the production, but hasn't really been happy with those he's tried out. So he's done it himself. And yeah, I think he does a good job.
But I got to say, I like having a little hate mail every now and again because it makes it real. You know, I get on sometimes and I see like people and they're like, you know, 5,000 ratings and they're like 5 stars. Like, okay, like, nobody is perfect in any business that they run. There's always things you can get better at and improve on. And, you know, it's good. It's good to have a couple of these every so often and take a deeper look, try to get better at production and get more engaging with guests, try to get some on that have some higher net worth. In fact, today we've got one that's at, you know, 9+. So that'll be interesting. Cause I know we've got a lot of requests for that, but, and maybe one of these days we'll get, you know, somebody on that's worth $1 billion. That would be fun. I've, got a few in my Rolodex, but, haven't got the nerve up yet to ask him to come on the podcast. So we'll keep working on that. And, for the meantime, continue to take volunteers. So yeah, if you'd like to be on the show, send us an email, millionairesunveiled@gmail.com. And, we're always looking for new great guests. Today's episode, I'm super pumped. In fact, we're doing something that we've never done before. We have a whole family on. We have Chris and Jen on today, and we did a little segment with their three children. Chris was wanting to see if we would do something like that, and so we did. We talked to their kids and a couple minute conversation with them about investing and what it's been like to be raised in essentially a millionaire household. I don't know that they know their parents' net worth exactly, but yeah, on the show we actually we talk about it being around 5, but Chris and Jen have some pretty sizable pensions. He's a pilot, but in the Air Force, she's in the reserves. And yeah, they've been at this for quite some time. And those pensions are, you know, likely valued at $4+ million. So for all intents and purposes, we say 5 on the show, but, and I think there is one reference to 9, but I'm calling it 9+ because they're definitely there. And yeah, they're going to be deck millionaires pretty soon. So it's going to be a great episode. Before we hop into that with them, though, we're going to talk about, I mean, this is, you know, we're recording this, what, St. Patrick's Day, which is a pretty cool holiday. Well, I'm a little Irish in me, but it's March Madness time. And we got our resident bracketologist here, Stacy, to give us a little lesson on kind of the economics of March Madness. Pretty cool. That's a resident bracketologist for personal finance.
I'm a far cry from a bracketologist, but I have been inundated with bracketology the last decade of being married to Jace. And so we started taking a look at kind of some of the finances behind the NCAA tournament and found that the NCAA tournament generates around $1.3 billion, or at least it did this last year, 22-23, from the NCAA tournament,
which is also a nonprofit. It's just a tax status. Let's be real.
I followed up. I was like, well, this is interesting. I was like, well, Jason, it's a nonprofit. and then he just laughed at me.
Yeah. That doesn't mean not for profit. It just means for profit, but tax status is not for profit. Let's be real.
But they do donate a lot of their funds to the schools.
Yeah, part of it, probably the NIL stuff. And heck, they didn't donate any to me yet. So they keep asking me. All the universities that I've ever been around keep asking me for.
You were practice squad, all right?
Hey. All right. Enough with the jokes. I can't wait. This is one of my favorite weeks. Actually, 3 weeks here. NCAA tournament. NBA or NBA playoff runs, and yeah, I'm a huge basketball fan, so maybe the podcast is going to suffer. I don't know. We'll see. At any rate, let's get into today's episode. Enough with the banter that, quite frankly, 95% of the audience loves. In fact, the ratings, the reviews, the downloads just skyrocket when we have a certain number of minutes in it. So anyway, without any further delay, though, let's get into this week's episode with Chris and Jen. Today on the show, we have Chris and Jen. We also have Travis, Ryan, and Madeline. This is the first time ever I actually sat down with a whole family. So real quick, let's tee it up. What have your parents taught you about money?
I'm a high schooler. I'm a sophomore, actually, in high school. And we have stocks and brokerage accounts for each of us, which have really kind of brought us into managing our own money and investing. I also have a job as a soccer referee during the fall and the spring, and I use my money from that to invest in the stock market also.
We play cash flow a lot, which helps us learn about how to like save money and invest in real estate and stocks too.
Madeline, what else have you learned about cash flow?
What's the primary goal of cash flow?
All right, Madeline also likes to play Monopoly.
Awesome. So I want to ask real quick. I mean, Travis, you're in high school. When did you start investing in the stock market? When did you start kind of understanding that process?
It was probably around, I'd say 12 years old. Maybe I know my parents and grandparents have some stocks for me before that. And I think my first stock was a share of Disney. And that was way back when I was probably 9. But from then, when I started investing myself, has been more recent. So I'd say probably 12.
Do you have conversations with friends about your investing, or is this just so out of the norm for somebody your age to be doing?
At school, I've heard some people have other stocks, but not really having conversations with anybody else about it.
Ryan or Madeline, any other crazy stories from conversations you've had with kids your age at school? Or is this just so out of the norm to be playing cash flow, Monopoly, et cetera? I mean, today in this day and age, I feel like people have their devices, like Monopoly is like a thing of the past.
During history, we were talking about the depression when all the stocks went down. And we were talking about stocks then.
And what did you learn at that point?
Just to kind of don't like spend all your money, like just go blow it on stocks, but like spend like some of your money on stocks, like, but don't like go overboard.
And how old are you now?
13.
Wow. Do you think that hit home differently for you than the other kids that you go to school with?
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Have y'all put to paper any goals that you're trying to accomplish with money and wealth at this point at such a young age?
Not like set goals, but like I like to have like get a few different stocks per year, I would say.
What's your favorite stock right now?
Hershey.
Hershey? Interesting. Hershey
and Apple.
How come Hershey and Apple?
Well, Hershey's done very well for me, and so has Apple.
All right. So it's about the money that's making you, huh? Not necessarily the product, or is it a little of both?
I like Hershey chocolate though. So.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. Travis, what about you? What's your favorite stock right now?
I just recently bought Tesla and McDonald's, but overall, I think Johnson & Johnson as a stock has done very well for me. So I like them. And kind of one of my own stocks I really wanted to invest in by myself was Ford Motor Company. So that would also be one I like a lot.
Awesome.
Stace, name some business partners that have really got it done.
Procter & Gamble.
Ben & Jerry.
Supply and Demand.
Salt and Pepper.
Peanut Butter and Jelly.
What about the perfect partners when it comes to growing your business?
That's Shopify.
That's right. That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million order stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to the leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less, thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unveiled. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/unveiled now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/unveiled. And thanks again to Shopify for supporting today's episode.
Chris and Jen, you want to just give us a little about your background and what you're up to now?
Sure. We're a military family. Chris is an active duty Air Force pilot, and then I'm a reserve officer. We met back in Korea. Well, we were both active duty and now have three kids and have lived in 6 different locations since we met. So still living the military life for now and looking forward to potentially retirement in the next few years.
Awesome. And we're going to get all into the store and all these 6 places that you've lived and everything. But before we do, what's your net worth today?
We are over $5 million.
Wow. And how is that broken up?
So we have $24,000 in cash. We have approximately $2.2 million in a taxable brokerage accounts. We have $1.6 million in retirement accounts to include Roth, traditional, and the thrift savings plan. We have $961,000 in real estate, which includes our primary home, 3 rental properties, a vacation home that we co-own, and 2 apartment syndications. We have $47,000 in 529 plans and $27,000 in other assets such as crypto and a position in a venture capital asset. And then I calculated our pensions over a 30-year period. Mine is a little bit more than Jen's because I've been active duty and she's been serving as reserve officer for some time. But my pension, I think, will be approximately $2.55 million, and Jen will have a $1.54 million pension.
Holy cow. So, I mean, all things considered, you may be upwards of 9-ish million probably with the pensions?
Probably. That's correct.
Wow. That's pretty remarkable. So let's dive a little bit into the brokerage account and the stuff that you've got in retirement or tax protected accounts. Is that pretty much primarily in the market?
Yeah, the taxable brokerage accounts are split up in individual stocks, mutual funds, and index ETF funds.
Do you day trade with any of those stocks, or is these are ones that you've picked that you have also talked to your kids about that you just hold forever?
Yeah, so I stopped day trading back in 2000 during the dot-com bust. And I then read a book called Random Walk Down Wall Street, which basically says that it is very, very difficult to predict the future. And that's why index funds and ETF funds, things like that are so powerful. And so, yes, I have still bought individual companies over a period of time. My game plan is to buy and hold and reinvest the dividends as long as it's a company that, you know, produces a dividend.
So do you only buy dividend paying stocks then?
No, I buy growth and value to include companies that pay a dividend. And so some of those growth, you know, stocks that I do own, Tesla, Netflix, Amazon, and I own others, but those are examples. Chipotle is actually a great one. So in 2006, I bought 37 shares when McDonald's split off Chipotle. And I've held those 37 shares since 2006, and they're worth, I think, $85,000.
Wow. You remember what you paid for them?
I think they were $40 a share.
Wow. Quite the return. So, Chin, that y'all met in Korea, let's rewind. I mean, how did you meet and what were some of these initial conversations like around money? Did you both have any wealth at that time, or was this, hey, we're falling in love and we're in Korea and in the military and hey, we've got a vision for our life together at this point?
Well, let's see. Korea was an interesting place, but yeah, it was basically met through work out on the flight line. And when we started talking about, you know, potential future, at that point, like, we were a little bit older, or at least I was older than Chris, but, you know, we weren't just starting out fresh out of college. We both had a few years under our belt. So we both came to the marriage with no debt and, really just, I mean, at least no like credit card debt or anything like that. And so I think we were on similar goals, but I will say that our upbringings maybe were slightly different. I would say Chris is more on he spends less than I do, although I would not say that I spend a lot. I think I'm very reasonable. So that there are definitely conversations that level setting on that. And like, you know, how do you budget? I mean, bringing together two people who have lived very independently for, you know, 10-ish years, and then trying to sort out the balance between, you know, what do you spend and what do you save, et cetera. But, you know, the nice thing is we had no school debt to bring to it. We had nothing, no big bills that we were, either of us were contributing as we got married.
Interesting. So those first conversations, I mean, was it about having the life y'all have today at this point and building that over the course of a couple decades?
I don't think we spent a ton of time talking about wealth in the financial sense. I think we did spend time talking about family and, you know, growing together. And yes, I do think to some degree we must have talked about account balances and things, because I don't think that I wouldn't have talked about those items. But I don't think it was necessarily front and center. I think I knew that Jen was a right fit because she didn't spend extravagantly. I didn't feel uncomfortable, you know, when I was around her or when we dealt with money by any means.
Hopefully there was more than just that that made you marry me.
Of course it was. I'm just here to ask about some of the financial stuff. We don't have to get into the other, how you fell in love. I mean, I get that, right? But I am curious, like at what point, and this is what I'm really trying to get at, I guess, is what point did this direction start to change where all of a sudden it was like, hey, let's put these building blocks and this foundation together, because you don't just wake up and be worth, you know, $5+ million overnight. I mean, this has been very intentional over several months and years, correct?
Yeah. So it started for me way back when I was a kid, you know, when my parents and my grandparents would send me one share of McDonald's, they would teach us hard work. You know, I went to the Air Force Academy and I learned about the time value of money. I read The Millionaire Next Door, Random Walk Down Wall Street. And that's when the Thrift Savings Plan and the Roth IRA became things. And so as a single person, I was able to allocate quite a bit of my salary to those retirement accounts. And so when Jen and I did meet in South Korea, my retirement accounts were fairly healthy, maybe $150,000, $200,000. I can't remember exactly in, you know, 2007 what they were. And then I had been buying, you know, individual stocks, you know, like Chipotle and other companies. And then I know Jen, we merged our assets, and she had, you know, she probably had $75,000 from her retirement accounts. So I think when we merged assets in 2008, you know, we were probably worth $250,000 to $400,000. And I think it was just a natural progression from there. You know, we didn't have a whole lot of debt. We had already been, you know, giving to our retirement accounts, and we just have kept that going forward.
And one thing that we did when we got married, so I ended up leaving the active duty side of things fairly shortly after we got married, just because of the way the military works and we couldn't necessarily be stationed together. So I entered the reserve. And one of the conversations we had when I left active duty was, we are going to build our lives around living off of one salary, because the steady salary was going to be Chris, and my reserve pay could fluctuate based on how much I was working or not working at the time. And especially as we moved overseas and back to the States, you know, it wasn't as easy to get necessarily a civilian job, not impossible, but I was also, you know, we had three kids during that time. So the way we set up our life was, you know, we'll live off of Chris's salary, and everything that we would do, all of our giving, our saving, et cetera, and living expenses would come out of Chris's salary. And then mine, whatever I earned during that year, was bonus. So that's given us the freedom to use my salary. And sometimes I've worked almost full time, and sometimes I've worked way less, but it's given us the freedom to use that how we see fit, whether that's, you know, investing in something different or what have you.
Did either of you enlist in the military right out of high school?
No, we both.
Well, sort of. Both of us entered the Air Force Academy immediately
through
high school.
Okay. So as you're going on this journey of the six places y'all went, I'm just curious, let's list them off and tell us which one was your favorite.
So we both had several assignments prior to meeting, but once we met in Korea, then I came back to DC. He went down to South Carolina. Then I met him in South Carolina, and that's when I transitioned to the reserve. From there, we went over to Germany. And we were in two separate locations in Germany, back to the DC area, Texas, and then now back again to Northern Virginia.
And I think our favorite, to be honest, was Texas.
Yes. How come?
So we were in Wichita Falls, which is, you know, north of Austin, northwest of Dallas. And the people were just so welcoming. They sponsor our family. I served on a school board, and that kind of accelerated our family's inclusion, I guess, to the community. But it was just a great family time.
And I'll say, when we moved to DC after that, we'd be driving and the kids would be like, "Mom, it's only supposed to take 2 minutes to go 1 mile, not 20. So they, the difference in traffic and population size is significant.
It is a lot of land in Texas. You might have to drive for 20 minutes, but that's because you got to go 20 miles.
Exactly.
Yeah. No kidding. So let's walk through. I mean, you start investing in all these different accounts. At what point did you start to kind of get comfortable to make some alternative investments, and why did you choose to do so?
Yeah, I think the alternative investments started in 2017-18. And I think the reason I became comfortable with looking at other options is because our net worth started to increase over a million, you know, 1.5, 2 million. And it also gave me an opportunity to learn about other industries, other sectors, other ways to set up a business. You know, crypto, we don't have a ton of crypto, and I'm not super comfortable with crypto, but, you know, we have $2,000 in crypto. And for me, if I invest in something, if I'm vested in something, I tend to learn more about it. And so that's why we have $2,000 in crypto as an example.
Do you plan to make more alternative investments?
Yes. And specifically in, you know, potential businesses, small businesses that maybe we don't necessarily run, but as an investment team, we would invest in others who run, you know, businesses. I could foresee us doing that.
Well, I think some of the conversations we had was just in diversifying to ensure that we, you know, all our eggs weren't in one basket. So, and I would say that we kind of got into real estate a little bit by accident at first, because we bought our first house in 2008. And then when we were leaving South Carolina, it was 2011 and not a very good time to sell. And so that was our first property that we collected in terms of, it became a by default rental property and investment, but it's actually done quite well for us over the years. And so we still have it.
Yeah. And technically I had brought a single family home to the marriage. I bought my first house in 2003 in Georgia. And so we still own that house. For many years, the rent was depressed, like $1,100, actually decreased to $900, but I just stuck with it. Then it went up to $1,200 maybe in 2020. And then just 3 or 4 months ago, I was on Zillow, you know, looking at the comps in Valdosta, Georgia. And I realized that the rent should be like $1,600, $1,700, $1,800. And so I went to my property manager. I said, "We've got to raise the rents." And so that particular house is now at $1,600, and it cash flows, you know, $750 approximately.
Interesting. So at this point, I mean, globally, how do you think about the dollars that come in? Are you still going to, you know, max out your retirement accounts, you know, do all the market investments that you're doing from a tax advantage standpoint, and then the brokerage and then alternative, or how does that kind of work in your mind at this point?
Yeah. So that's a great question. And so we actually don't invest a whole lot of our money in the retirement accounts. We have Jen investing in her thrift savings plan a little bit, but where our goal is saving money in accounts that we can access. So primarily in a high yield savings account or a money market fund that's yielding, you know, 5%. So we can purchase a home outright post-retirement, military retirement, and also fund a potential consulting business after we retire. And so I know we're probably leaving money on the table by doing that in the long term, but at this point, I don't see the value in maximizing all of our retirement accounts if we have these other, since we have these other goals.
When did you discontinue maxing those out?
2 to 3 years ago.
Okay. So it's been more recent.
Yeah, it was more recent. And I think the reason that, you know, I guess we have the luxury to do that is because we came to the, to a marriage later in life, and we had both already been maximizing our Roth IRAs, you know, our TSPs to some regard. And so that's allowed us some flexibility in how we view the taxable versus non-taxable, you know, retirement accounts.
In terms of making investment decisions at this point, and maybe even the last 5, 10, 15 years, is this something that you all do together and you get to a point where you both essentially, from a shareholder vote standpoint, would both agree on to make do? Or does one kind of handle one piece of it versus another handle the other piece? Or how does that work? How's that dynamic now?
We definitely talk about it. Chris is a little bit, I'm probably more a little more risk averse than he is. So he's,
I mean, heck, he's a pilot.
Well, I think that's,
I guess you both were at one point, right? Or still are, kind of.
Oh, well, I was never a pilot. I did a different type of work. But yeah, he's now, I think, gotten to the point. Well, I think we've gotten to the point where he's like, oh, we can try some other things that may be a little more, what do you call it? But anyway, a little more risky. And to me, I guess we agree upon it in theory, but it hasn't harmed anything.
As long as I show her the results every 3 to 6 months and she sees the number, she's usually okay with it.
But not everything's worked out.
There we go. The truth comes out, man. That's how my wife is with me. She's always like, you know, a little accountability on stuff, you know? I love it. So what has it worked out? I'm curious now.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple individual stocks that, you know, haven't performed very well. There was one very speculative investment that I don't necessarily want to talk to a lot about because it hasn't officially failed. I just don't have confidence that it's going to succeed. And it was a fairly significant number. And so that we're preparing for that one to be a failure. And that's probably the most significant one that Jen is referring to.
Was that something that you can get out of and cut your losses, or is that got to go the distance because it's in control or somebody else has control of it at this point?
Yeah, somebody else has control of it.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So at the time, let's rewind, when you made that investment, I mean, what were you thinking and kind of how did you underwrite that with the intent of having a return?
Yeah. So again, I did a value proposal of our entire, you know, portfolio. It was also when we were living in Texas and being exposed to, you know, businessmen and different opportunities. You know, this opportunity was brought to my attention. The goal was actually something that both Jen and I thought would play out, and it has something to do with real estate. And I don't know if you've seen the real estate news about judgments on the National Real Estate Association, but basically the fees, you know. And so that investment actually, in the end, at the end of the day, may play out. It's just going to require more time.
Interesting. Was it, if you don't mind me asking, was that in this, like a syndication type deal?
No, it was more of a kind of a technology application in the real estate space.
Ah, interesting. Okay. So more of a tech investment than a real estate investment per se.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Is there anything from that experience at this point that you've learned and approach, I guess, investments in the alternative space differently now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Listen to her.
No, I mean, I think, and I did, but this just, reaffirm the importance of doing due diligence and how important it is to, you know who the key players are and the key stakeholders. And so
and what the accountability is to the people who invest in those stakeholders.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. Where do you go from here at this point? I mean, we've talked a little bit about not putting more money into the market and retirement accounts. Is there a certain number? Is there a certain legacy that you want to do, that you want to leave behind? Walk us through that.
Yeah, we don't necessarily have a net worth goal. In the short term, we are shooting for a passive income goal of between 150 and 200,000 by the time I retire from the military in 2026. And hopefully that'll free us up to explore new opportunities. And one of those new opportunities could be starting a national security and leadership consulting business. About 3 or 4 years ago, Jen and I created this mantra, and the mantra is REACH. It's an action word, but it's also underpinned by 5 principles: respect, engagement, accountability, character, and health. And what we'd like to do is use that mantra to basically set the culture and set the values and the principles of that future company that we're thinking about starting. And then, you know, see where things go from there. You have anything to add, Jen?
No, that sounds good.
Okay. Awesome. So the passive income goal, do you count essentially some of that dividend income that kicks off from those investments in the taxable account?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. And the goal, to be honest, wouldn't be to use that dividend income, but if we need to, it's available to us.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the unique things, and obviously having the whole family on here, first time we've ever done that, you've taken a very hands-on approach with your children from an investment standpoint. I mean, they're teenagers and younger. Talk us through those decisions and when did you kind of start that process?
Yeah, I think, we've just always talked to them about it from, like Travis, I think, mentioned, we gave them their Disney stock one Christmas, and I think Ryan might have only been about 5 at that time. And so then just starts the conversation. I think Travis was handed the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad several years ago, and he actually read it with quite a bit of interest. And I would just say our family, you know, like in general, you know, we make very conscious decisions about any kind of larger purchases or, you know, what we're going to do with our money. And the kids are part of that discussion. So they hear it. And like Ryan mentioned, playing things like cash flow, they start understanding the language and, you know, what does passive income mean? And why does it matter if I invest, or, you know, why don't I just go spend my money that I earn reffing on, you know, whatever the thing of the day is? Because then they realize, well, is that buying that thing right now? Is that what's necessarily bringing me joy or happiness? I mean, they have their hobbies and they go out and certainly, you know, purchase things. Travis likes to fish, for example, and he'll get himself some reels or rods or whatever. But, you know, kind of having a balance to spending and saving and then also any charitable donations. So
have they all responded in a similar manner?
I don't know if Madeline fully grasps it yet, but, you know, the boys enjoy, you know, looking at stocks and researching them and seeing, you know, what makes sense. And then every now and then checking in on them. You asked earlier about, you know, do day trading or not, but Chris has done a good job with them and explaining and showing, you know, his Chipotle stock to them. It's like, this is why you may not want to be, you know, up and down, in and out, just stay the course and you could potentially see huge growth in the long run.
Is there any fear at some point that, you know, they get to 20, 22 or something and any of that changes because of external factors? Or do you think the foundation at this point is so solid that the trajectory you see them on is going to continue, you know, from a head start standpoint?
Yeah, I'm not, you know, concerned about the financial foundation. I think we've provided them a solid financial foundation. But, you know, one of the other things that we focus on as a family is our church community and our faith. And so we spend a lot of time doing those type of activities. And, you know, it's more about than just financial growth. It's about spiritual growth as well.
And values.
And values.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So let's transition here a little bit. You talked about wanting to do some investments in small business, consulting firm for possible yourself. Do you have kind of the platform that you have picked out from an investment standpoint to invest in other businesses? Or is this really, hey, I just want to have my own when I retire that I want to double down on?
Yeah, like I said, we do have a financial interest in a venture capital fund. And so I know people that could help us either find companies to invest in. If that's the question that you asked.
Yeah. Is that, I guess my question really is that the plan with some of this alternative investments is to make some of those investments, or is it more to accumulate capital so you've got a little bit more backstop for when you know, take that leap and start your consulting firm?
Oh yeah. So the primary goal is to accumulate capital so we can transition successfully to civilian life. And then once we successfully transition to civilian life, which in our minds is a fully paid off home plus some cash to start a consulting business. But once those two are set and we have other funds, or we want to deploy, you know, some of the funds that we already have into other alternative investments, then we'd be interested in doing that.
Awesome. Well, let's wrap up with some rapid fire questions. I want to hear answers from both y'all on this, because this is great. So what's the most expensive pair of shoes you purchased?
I think mine were cowboy boots when we lived in Texas. I think I spent about $100 on those. And Chris said what?
Yeah. So back in 2007, I bought a $125 pair of Air Jordans that I kept, no kidding, up until a year ago. And I probably had to repair them 10 times with shoe glue.
Yeah. There's a point when you got to call it quits.
Hey, I had one of those shirts like that. My wife finally threw out. I think I had it probably for 15 years or something, but I love that shirt. What's the most expensive meal out that you paid for?
Actually, it was just last month. My parents came to town and we were celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. So we went to a little Italian place in Georgetown, and that was for them, us, and our entire family. My sister actually came out as well. $520 plus $20 for parking. So it was worth it, though. It was a big celebration.
Yeah, definitely worth it.
Nice. What about the most expensive experience or trip that you've been on?
Yeah, we went post-ish COVID, summer of 21. We took the entire family to Colorado to a family camp. Met up with some of our friends from Texas and enjoyed that. So that all told was about 10,000.
Nice. Would you recommend those family camps to others?
Yeah, this one for sure. We loved it. It was amazing, a great experience, and just a chance to really connect. And it's like nonstop, but a lot of fun all the
time.
Good
deal. Good deal. What's a key lesson that you learned from childhood?
Okay, I'll answer this one as well. I would just say, you know, my dad, both his parents were immigrants, and his father passed away when he was only 13. So he really had to step up and work hard to support himself and his mom. And so that instilled in me just a work ethic. And, you know, he was the one that taught me about investing at a young age too, because he's lived the life where they needed him to work. And so that just taught me how to save and just keep that in my mind as I move forward. Not that it was the only goal, but that was part of the.
Chris, what about you?
So I think it was hard work as well.
And cutting coupons.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I'll go that route. So my mom was a big coupon cutter, and my grandma was a big coupon cutter. And one of the things that my grandma instilled in me is be resourceful with your money, and you can also, you know, own a cottage and do these other things. And she actually gave me an article, and it was cut your napkins and you can also own a cottage. And in that article, it had like 20 different ways to save money. And no kidding, we ended up purchasing their cottage. And that's the vacation home that we referenced earlier.
Wow.
And that's to one of your questions, though, I will say when he showed me this article when we were dating, I was getting a little bit nervous.
Oh, man, that's awesome. I love it.
What's the most fun that you've had with money?
Oh, I would say, yeah, traveling is probably my big thing. So we have a lot of goals for future travel as well, but been especially when we were living overseas, we traveled all over Europe with the family, and in Korea, we got to go to some pretty cool places as well from Korea, jumping off from Korea. So Thailand, Vietnam, etc. So I think I'd put travel experiences at the top.
Same for you, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, and this might be part of another answer, but I love to snowboard. And so maybe, getting in back into snowboarding sometime in the future might be in my future, I guess. But yeah, I've had a lot of fun spending money on snowboarding.
Is there a particular experience or trip that you're looking forward to, or is it an epic pass for you, Chris, at this point, or an icon pass?
Could be an epic pass, but I know we've talked about Israel.
Not right now, though.
Not right now, but Israel, Iceland, Italy, New Zealand. Yeah, so there's a few places.
Been to a couple of those myself. Some great ones. What's the craziest thing you've ever done to earn money?
So this actually applies to the snowboarding. So when I was at the Air Force Academy during the winter months, of course, my friends and I liked to snowboard. The small stipend that we were paid, which I was very grateful that the U.S. government paid us a stipend, but it still wasn't enough to, fund a snowboarding trips. And so my buddy and I discovered that there are temporary hiring agencies. And so I think three times these agencies farmed us out to hotels where we cleaned rooms for 3 or 4 hours at a time. And that fed our snowboarding addiction.
Jen, what about you?
Man, I don't know if I've done anything too crazy to earn money. Mine was all pretty vanilla. Yeah, I can't think of anything.
Okay. What was your first job?
I was a lifeguard. So I started at 14 and was lifeguarding all summer and babysitting. I probably even started babysitting earlier, actually. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, one of my first jobs was as a busboy at a family camp in upstate New York when I was in high school. And that's where I started to read the Wall Street Journal. So my buddy, who I roomed with, would get the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if it was every day or once a week. But anyways, he would get the Wall Street Journal. He would read it. And if there was a word that he didn't understand, he would collect all the words and send them to his dad. And his dad was a World War II veteran. He was much older than what a normal age father for, somebody of our age would be. So that was their connection. But anyways, that was my introduction to the power of the Wall Street Journal.
Interesting. Do y'all remember what you made at those jobs?
$4.25 an hour.
Yeah, it was probably $5 an hour. $5 an hour.
I don't even buy you a foot-long sandwich nowadays.
Yeah.
it might be, heck, I remember it was back in the day, you used to joke about the 99 cents or a buck used to buy you a 20-minute phone call, but it's probably about $5 now if you can find a payphone anywhere. You got to go to Europe maybe to get one, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. What age did you become a millionaire at?
I think we were about 35.
Okay. And how quickly did that second one come? Do you remember?
It was probably 2 to 3 years.
Okay. And it snowballed pretty quick from there.
Yeah.
What has a financial habit that you've changed the most since you become a millionaire?
We go to Chipotle more.
You got to get that stock dividend, right? You got to reinvest those dividends, but in a different manner. Is that more of just I can spend a little bit more freely on some of the things that I enjoy, and Chipotle is one of them? Or is it just, hey, I'm going to go to Chipotle because I can?
I think it's what the first, I feel like, because I'll be honest, Chris is a little more, I think I mentioned this earlier, probably more thrifty than I am. And so, yes, I think it's loosened him up just a little bit in spending and being able to be like, okay, fine. Yeah, you take a family of five out, it's not cheap anywhere, but, it's something we can do and it's something we enjoy and it's good. So.
Has your spending increased over time?
Yeah, I think naturally it does just with a family of five.
And yeah, kids get more expensive as they get older.
Yeah, sports and schooling
and I think
camps, they did quite a few camps this past summer. So
do you use a credit card?
We do. We have the American Express Platinum and the Sapphire Chase Reserve, because both of those companies waive the annual fees for active duty military members.
But the benefits, nice little perk.
The benefits are amazing.
Nice little perk.
Yeah.
Will you keep those post-military career?
As long as somebody pays for the fee.
Got to get that fee covered, huh? A bunch of the airline ones now, I think they send you flight discount. At least that's the one I get from American. I get it. You know, they charge you the $99 fee or $100 fee or whatever, and then they send you a flight certificate to cover it, and then all the other benefits or whatever. But mm-hmm. I fly enough, I use it, so it doesn't really bother me. But at any rate, I feel like they're charging the fee, and then they're hoping that people don't use the discounts on the back end or the booking the revenue on the front end, and it's, you know, all the games they play, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, what are some last pieces of advice that you'd give to somebody who's just starting out?
Yeah. So what I would recommend is, for sure, young people, get a library card and go read the Wall Street Journal at your public library. And then also for anybody, try grocery shopping at Aldi.
And I think, you know, one thing that we've hit on throughout here is just the time value of money, and going back to starting early. That's what we're hoping with our kids. We start early, and that'll set them up for success throughout life. Because you can really change the trajectory there, you know, if you start early.
Awesome. That's Chris and Jen of the net worth of $5+ million. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Chase.
Thanks for listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast with Chase Mattinson. For more stories, investment opportunities, and information, check out our website, millionairesunveiled.com. See you next time when you'll hear from another everyday millionaire.